Well, hello, everybody. This is Lee Olson, and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here because today we've got my good friend, Dr. Brad Jackman. Say hello, Brad.
Hello, everybody.
Today we're going to be doing one of our lameness series. This will be a short one, but we're going to talk about today shoeing intervals. How long should you take in between the times that you get your horse shod? So, with no more ado, I'm just going to throw a wrench in the system and say this is hands down the number one thing for keeping your horse sound and also keeping a good farrier. Because if you don't stick to it, it's really hard to stay ahead of problems, and it's really hard to keep a farrier for two reasons. One, he can't depend on you. They all have priorities in their books. Two, he can't get ahead of anything because he's always working reactively instead of proactively, meaning fix the wreck every time you come instead of getting ahead of it before it's a problem, getting ahead of it before it's a problem. So a lot of people say they can't find a farrier, like a long schedule. I say they're linked. What do you say, Brad?
Well, I think that this is what I usually tell people. I was like, if you get a good farrier, I said, stick to their schedule. I said, if it meant making them cookies every time they showed up, if it meant buying them a six pack of beer every time they showed up, whatever it did, but it's the foundation of the horse, and you got to work as a team, and it's one of the most critical things you can do for your horse.
What about the, oh man, I just hear all the farriers around the world saying, amen, tell what's her name about this or his name.
Yeah.
Speak from the veterinarian's perspective on this. How important is the shoeing cycle to the veterinarian? Does it really help get lameness solve issues?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, and I look at it pretty simplistically in that if you look at, especially front feet, you know, 90% of the lameness is going to be from the knee down. So most of it's going to be concentrated in the foot area. From a lameness standpoint, if I had a horse that showed up lame, pain localized to the foot, but then if I looked at that foot and I saw a horse that, for lack of a better term, I would say their foot care is mismanaged, which a lot of times meant way too long between shoeing intervals, way too long a toe, could be imbalanced, could maybe they grow imbalanced, maybe, you know, they don't grow imbalanced, who knows? But I had a good chance of fixing that horse if I had a good farrier on my team trying to fix that. But, you know, I mean, the ones that always I'd scratch my head about are, okay, I got horses that have foot pain, foot lameness, and they're shod really well, and they're shod on a really consistent shoeing schedule and that type of thing. Then I got to start thinking outside my box a little bit about, you know, what am I going to do to try to fix this horse? And I might not be quite as confident that I'm going to get a quicker fix.
You know, it's funny you say that. We actually have the same exact thought process. You know, like when a horse comes in and it's shod really well, it's kind of like, oh man, this might be difficult.
Yeah.
Where if they come in and they look like they're wearing like clown shoes, and it's be like, oh, this is probably an easy one.
So. Yeah. No, I mean, when they come in and they shot really well and this, that, then you're like, okay, now you're acting like, okay, well, we're going to the shoe store. Now we got to try this. Maybe they like this, or maybe they don't. Now we got to try something different. Sometimes it's trial and error.
That is a whole nother rabbit hole we could go down right there. Like a lot of times in lameness, we'll end on that. A lot of times in lameness, seriously, it's trial and error, isn't it?
You bet. I mean, it's like if you have a poor handling car come in and it's got really crappy tires on it, odds are really good if you just put new tires on it, it's probably going to handle a ton better.
Right.
And that goes to the horse as well. If you shoe them well, and, you know, and well is not just, okay, we're putting the right shoe on them. And well is not necessarily, okay, you know, we're pretty well balanced between a left front and a right front. Well, can just be we're at a good shoeing schedule.
Right.
You know, and you know, and realize that as we have now bred these horses for disposition, athleticism, everything else, nobody I know breeds a horse saying, you know what, I'm going to breed all these horses to build the very best foot I can on a horse, right?
It's like the last thing.
No, that doesn't even come into consideration, right?
Yeah.
So we are breeding horses that don't have as good feet on them as they did 30, 40 years ago.
Absolutely.
And, you know, 30, 40 years ago, the old adage was, well, you know, we would trim them, shoe them every 8 weeks, you know. Well, I'm here to say that that is probably very grossly inadequate.
Absolutely. And the proof is in the pudding, really, because look at the next time, maybe you don't go to many shoe stores, but a lot of tack stores sell shoes if you're a horse owner, okay? Look around. What does 80% of the shoes there have? Breakover.
Right.
One of the most overused words there is. And I'm a big fan of breakover.
Sure.
But it's got to be under on top of the right trim. Like, it is my number one pet peeve when a vet says this horse needs a wedge and lots of breakover and he's at 8 weeks. Right. I'm like, how would you know that?
Right.
Like, let's trim him, then we'll talk about it.
Well, that's the thing. So, you know, what we do know now is we are breeding horses, raising horses that grow a lot more toe than they do heel.
Right.
So now you put shoes on a horse and, you know, naturally if a horse just goes barefoot, they will likely, depending on the ground they're in, but they're likely going to wear their toe off pretty significantly.
Right.
Through that over time or through that cycle. But what I will say now is you put a shoe on, they can't wear that toe off. And you look at these horses, and I mean, a lot of these horses, even by 5 weeks, are starting to get a significant excess toe length, even if they were maybe shot perfectly at the time of the shoeing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's in our business, you know, like I've really tried to get along with everybody and be nice to people and not fire anybody and all that. But honestly, what I've come to is like, if you can't stick to a 5 week schedule, I really can't have you because you're going to end up making me look bad.
Right.
And there's a lot of farriers that like a long schedule. And to me, I think you're crazy because if you're going to do an 8 week schedule, like I get it. Okay. Like we've all done what we have to do in when backed in a corner. We all like to put food on the table. This isn't that conversation. What we're talking about is what's good for the horse. What's good for business is a short schedule. So you keep moving it up and you get a chance to get ahead of these problems. Like I said, you get the chance to be proactive. And to me, that is huge.
Well, I mean, I've had the opportunity, you know, through my career to look at a bunch of horses before and after being shot. And I can tell you that, you know, there's a ton of horses, even if they're shot exceptionally well, meaning that they are very well balanced. Their angle is right smack on to where it's supposed to be. And, you know, if you look at, you know, their breakover or whatever, that they're using a shoe and or whatever, but they're setting it by the breakover and your balance inside, you know, we always look at balance from an inside to outside standpoint, medial lateral standpoint.
Right.
But there's also balance from a toe to heel standpoint, or front to front of the foot to the back of the foot standpoint. And you can look at those horses and I can almost guarantee you, unless you have a horse that grows very evenly foot, all the way around,
which is extremely rare.
Extremely rare. That almost all those horses by 5 weeks of age are now imbalanced from a front of the foot to the back of the foot standpoint. And even their angle's changing now because they're growing more toe than their heel.
Yep.
So now all of a sudden they're getting a little bit of a more towards a broken axis, you know, through their foot pastern angle.
So speak about this. So, you know, like I've seen it play out so many times where you've got an actual injury that comes in, like something's pissed, right? Sure. There's something upset inside the foot and you balance it. I believe in center of rotation, sure. Balancing it 50-50. Yep. Some people don't, you do you, but I've just seen this work so many times. I'll never think that it doesn't work. And especially it's not always obtainable.
No,
but when you have a horse with a real injury and you fix that, that horse gets better.
Sure.
So that to me tells them it's true. But speak to this, Brad, on the just 5 week shoeing on a sound performance horse, what do you think as far as inflammation happens in that hoof capsule when they're trying to go 8 weeks instead of 5 weeks?
Or even 6 or 7 weeks if they need to be on 5 weeks.
Or four if they got a real problem.
Some of them do need to go every four. And so here's the thing that's going to happen over time. Okay. So number one, your angle is going to get off. So you will have likely some angle change throughout the coffin joint, some degree of coffin joint inflammation, first and foremost. Second thing you're going to have is that as the angle changes, you're going to have an increased you know, the navicular bone basically serves as a pulley system or a fulcrum for the tendon to come around.
Right.
So as that angle changes, you're going to have an increase in the fulcrum effect. You're going to have more stress on your deep flexor tendon. You're going to have more pressure or pressure within the navicular bursa between the tendon and the bone. And then the other thing is, if you have a real significant change in angle that happens, now the navicular bone is really not supposed to be a weight-bearing bone.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we just made it a weight-bearing bone. And so you add that into effect, as well as, oh, I mean, there's others, you know, the deep flexor tendon's the natural one to think of, and it's the most significant one to think of, but there's other ones involved as well, whether it be collateral ligaments or.
If you're even wondering about this, we're going to avoid this rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But Google the navicular region, and there is the suspensory ligament of the navicular bone. There is collateral ligaments. There's the impar ligament, which ties it to the coffin bone. There's a lot
of chondrocoronal ligaments. There's all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah. So ultimately, I always say God had a good plan when he built the horse.
Sure.
And if you can stick to that plan, like it's going to be fine, because tell me if I'm wrong here, but there's ultimately in the horse's leg, there's a push for every pull. There's a balancing act. There's something taking care of the other side. If you've got something going over
always.
Here. So if you kind of keep it in the realm of where God intended it with a correct bony column alignment,
right?
And the foot balance the way it's supposed to, problems, unless it's like catastrophic, like car wreck type injuries, they just don't happen, right?
No, not generally, no. I mean, unless, you know, there's a true physical trauma that happens, whether it's, you know, injury, trauma, you know,
fell off
something
a cliff
with a really bad ground type, you know, something like that.
Accidental.
But as far as just your typical wear and tear, normal use, no, I mean, they should do fine.
Okay. How about this one? I believe that most of the injuries that come to us are the straw that broke the camel's back.
No doubt.
Type of injuries to where, you know, this horse hasn't had a problem. You see him at 5 and this horse, he just does fine shod like this or whatever. And then you see the horse at 8 or a teenager and the sucker is crippled.
Oh yeah. No. I mean, we see it all the time. I mean, we know that, especially with MRI these days, right? We can have, for lack of a better term, you know, degenerative looking aspects regarding some soft tissues and stuff, whether it be the suspensory, the deep flexor tendon, or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, I mean, there were changes in almost every horse that I did a foot MRI on that would be typical from horse to horse to horse after a certain age.
Yeah.
That's wear and tear.
Right.
You know, that's just stuff that happens. And, you know, and as long as we support that well, we can expect it to really not progress at a significant rate that it actually leads to a lameness and injury.
Well, you just got to stay on top of it. So,
yeah.
And how would you advise horse owners to do that? Annual x-rays maybe, or lameness exam?
I think annual x-rays are critical. Absolutely critical. Maybe you may need to be, if you have a horse that wants to grow a little crooked, it may need to be even more often than that.
What about shoeing at the vet?
X-rays,
I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think it oftentimes needs to be a team.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way. So, you know, it depends. Yeah, I mean, I always loved it when, you know, they're being shod at our clinic and we could actually take x-rays. And then as a, for like a bedroom team, look at the x-rays, talk about the x-rays face-to-face in person with the horse right there.
Yeah.
And then see. And then the nice thing about what they're doing them at the hospital for us would be, and it would happen not infrequently that, and if you, you know, you can come with a game plan, you know, but game plans change. And so all of a sudden, well, we really wanted to achieve this through a trim. Well, we're not certain we got that through a trim. We're not even close. Can we get a little more aggressive or not? And even x-rays during a trim are, you know, can be critical to try to see, you know, what you're going to do, because the foot can lie.
Well, that's why we take x-rays in between, is because someone will show up and they'll be like, oh, don't worry, we've got x-rays.
Yeah.
When was the last time you took them? 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're useless.
Yeah. You get to know what it looked like 6 months ago, but
right,
it doesn't mean anything about
You might see some huge smoking gun, but the biggest thing that I would encourage is, like, you know what, if you've just got, you call me out now if I'm wrong here, but in my opinion, if you've just got a nice performance horse that you're proud of, one of those that you like a lot, maybe you're making your living on it, maybe you just love the animal, annual x-rays and have just a exam with a knowledgeable vet. Be like, hey, does everything look okay to you? Perfect. Okay. Slap on the butt, get out of there and go home.
No, I mean, and this is what I would tell people is that to me, annual x-rays are just as critical as vaccines, deworming, anything else.
Catch a problem early.
Preventative medicine.
Right.
Preventative medicine, right?
And what a cheap insurance.
And then, you know, and so then, you know, one of the questions they would ask me is, what's the best time to x-ray him? And I'm like, well, either A, I would say, if you want me to evaluate your farrier, then I want to take them soon after they were done.
Right.
You know, if you want me to have as much input as to maybe what we should try to be doing and give an idea to the farrier of how much foot they got to work with and those types of things and how we could work better as a team, then in all honesty, I want to show them right before they're getting trimmed and shod.
Well, yeah, you got to
x-ray them.
Yeah. You got to have them show up and work as a team that way.
Yeah.
I would have to answer that as like a week after, because if there's any foot soreness, you don't want any lameness going off just being shod, but you could still evaluate a good shoeing.
Yeah, you can still evaluate the shoeing. I mean, you know, I can still, through radiographs, evaluate a shoeing aspect.
Right.
Right.
With that, my mantra has always been, just leave a little bit more foot on them and come back a little bit sooner. And I learned that because I was shoeing Futurity rein and cow horses. And the short version is, these horses don't get to have a bad day.
Right.
Like, it's not okay for them to be a little sore after you shot them. It's not okay for them to stumble or get whatever, because they were a little long and you couldn't get there. 100% inexcusable. And to me, it was one of the greatest things in my career, because I learned how important that was. And when you have those horses on a 5-week schedule, it's like clockwork. 5 weeks, boom, boom, boom. I even asked them, that was when I had like 5 big barns that I would go to. I would say, what day of the week is best for you? Well, I settled on Tuesdays, because Mondays, one guy, rain cow horse guy, Clay Vollmer, he said, Mondays suck for everybody. Don't come on Mondays. And then Thursdays and Fridays, everybody's usually got a show. But on Tuesdays, that's when I would go to the big accounts. And the rest of the time is when I was transitioning to a haul-in. And now we're all haul-in mainly. But yeah, that you can have, point is, you can have such a dependable schedule. 5 weeks, boom, boom, boom. I mean, unless there's Christmas coming up, like in 5 weeks, I will be there.
Yeah.
And that's how you keep a great farrier too, folks. Like, they like dependability just like you. I know farriers get a bad name for that, but they all, meaning everyone, has a priority list.
Well, and it's hard for farriers. I mean,
and
it's hard for farriers because, you know, in reality, when we look at, okay, you know, we want to promote breakover in these horses. Okay. So we can't have toes be too long. Okay. But, you know, we're not going to likely be putting 4 nails on each side, because now we got heel nails that are too far back and are actually keeping the heel from being able to expand. Okay. So then how do you balance all that? Well, about the easiest way and the only way I know is to usually have a proper shoeing schedule, shoeing interval.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I don't know any other way to try to do it, because I can guarantee you that if horses are being shod every 8 weeks, I would say odds are really, really, really good. There's too much toe on those horses, so they can drive the extra nails in, or they're bringing the foot back so the toe's not horrendously long, or bringing the shoe back so the toe's not horrendously long at 8 weeks. But now we got nails too far back or something like that. It's very hard to say, I got a horse that can go 8 weeks and do good and look reasonably good and not have them actually, there's compromises that are being made in the shoeing and the actual care of the horse.
Absolutely. And some farriers I know will argue with you on this about how a good shoeing, you can manage the distortion and then how much of a positive this can be. And you know what? Like, you guys can do you if you really believe in that. But in my opinion, it's craziness. because you're having to work twice as hard. You're having to put new shoes on because the more pressure and work that the toe has to do, the more the toe's going to wear out. So you're going to have to put, it's going to cost you more money in shoes. You're going to have twice as many horses. Think about it. From 5 weeks to 8 weeks is nearly twice as much. So you're going to have twice as many holidays and kids' birthdays and all this stuff that you're going to have to schedule around, and all this liability, lost shoes, stuff happening, all this. You can seriously cut your clientele probably, what, 60%?
Yeah, probably.
So yeah, don't do it. All right, let's not make this too long.
Barefoot. Well, plus, if you don't have all the extra toe and this and that and so on, maybe you won't lose shoes quite so much.
Well, exactly. That's what I hit in my business. Yeah. Most shoes are lost in that sixth week.
Yeah.
So what happened if you got there a week earlier? No lost shoes. Yeah. And then nobody likes lost shoes. Like the owner doesn't, you don't. Like, it's just one thing to skip.
Screws up everybody's schedule.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, it's just way better.
Yeah.
So let's talk about barefoot trimming.
Yeah.
So barefoot trimming, I know a lot of people like to leave them long because they're trying to save money or whatever. And you know what? You talk in a second about this, Brad, but my opinion is if it's a broodmare, you know, if they're turned out or whatever, like, I get it. 8 weeks is fine. But if it's a performance horse, 4 weeks tops, or I'm not being a part of it, because you create a bevel in a barefoot trim. And the only thing that stops that foot from breaking up is the strength in shapes, which is a bevel. So you get there sooner. You can bevel it up, lower the heels, bevel it up, lower the heels. And these horses can compete at a very high level barefoot, I've found, but the secret sauce is getting there sooner, because if they get a little bit of toe, breaks off, then they're out of foot. Now you got to shoe them.
Or the other thing that I've seen is you get too aggressive with the bevel around the toe. Now all of a sudden you're actually got sole pain, toe
no,
pain.
No, you're talking about the transition period in the barefoot.
Yeah, that's a whole thing. Yeah. But you take that wall away, now they're on the sole. Right. And so, you know, it still comes down to time. And then it all depends on what ground they're in too.
Oh,
on top
sure.
of them. Right.
Oh, for sure.
You know, so, I mean, if they're staying in a stall and working in a nice sandy arena and so on and so forth, you know, maybe that'll help. And then, but yeah, if they got to go out on some hard ground and rocky ground and uneven ground and so on and so forth, it's going to be a little harder to be barefoot.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know what I found the biggest thing is with barefoot is the owner.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because there's some horses that just have these magnificent, beautiful feet.
Yeah.
And I don't want anybody to ever feel taken advantage of my business. Yes, we charge a lot, but I don't want anybody to think that I was taken advantage. So when I see a horse with a really great feet and I know they're not using them very much, I can be like, hey, I really think your horse can go barefoot.
Right.
What I've found through years of having that conversation is that it depends on the owner. Can you park at the end of the parking lot to where they can walk on the grass? Can you put soft ride boots on when you've got some of these massive parking lots? To me, it always comes down to the parking lot, because if you can get around that, you're good. Or as long as you don't live on a rock plate. I mean, here in Weatherford, Texas, I mean, it's pretty nice, but every arena, pretty much everywhere I've been, which is a lot of arenas, they're all pretty nice.
Yeah. Arenas are pretty nice, but you still may have to go over a gravel road to get to it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the point. And that does not count for if you need slide, if you need traction,
right,
if you need
all the other
blah,
things.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, consider it. Also, if you have a foot sore horse, torching it really helps, and you need to be careful about that. And you did not hear that from me. Don't try this at home.
No, I mean, and I think, you know, where the torch got used the most, like out in California and stuff where we were, I mean, it dry, and you talk about hard and
right
hard ground.
Right.
And I mean, they would just have to torch the sole to just get a hoof knife to go through it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's that torching is funny, because if you torch it, it's softer and it's easier to knife. But if you don't touch it, it creates a crust and it gets harder.
Right.
So,
right. Funny. It's timing.
Yeah.
Just like most things, it's timing.
All right. Let's wrap this up in a bow.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Here's my thing. If you have a horse that you consider somewhat any kind of a performance horse, I can tell you 7-8 weeks is likely not going to cut it. You know, you might be able to get away with 6 week, you know, but if you're really going to try and stay on top of it, it's going to be more likely 5. And then there's going to be some that are going to need to be done every 4 weeks if you want to do it, depending on how their feet grows and stuff. And realize, and the other thing is x-rays are critical to me. X-rays are absolutely critical. And working as a team is critical, you know. Yeah. And if anybody gets grossly, you know, offended by something, then to me, that's a red flag that maybe that's not somebody who wants to be a team member, you know, right, yeah. type of a thing. And if anybody is like, oh, you don't need x-rays or this and that or so on and so forth, then I'm here to tell you, I don't know how many thousands and thousands and thousands of feet I looked at and with x-rays. And I will tell you, still to this date, I cannot look at a horse's foot and tell you exactly how that bony column is sitting in that foot without an x-ray.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because I've heard some older farriers say, I know exactly where the coffin bone is. I don't need x-rays because I've looked at so many. That's a quote from some guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Successful guy. Well, I don't. I mean, that's why we take an x-ray before trim, after trim.
Yeah.
We don't even make a plan until after trim, like on a tricky horse. Like if we got them lined out, it's, you don't have to do that.
Granted, I mean, you're dealing a lot of times with problem horses, right? Yeah.
But there's been, we make a plan after the x-ray trim.
Sure.
After trim x-ray, sorry.
Right.
And then we shoe them, and then we take another one. Because what I've found is like, they, even on some of the ones where I've been like, ah, nailed it. That is the most beautiful shoeing in the whole wide world. Then you take an x-ray and you're like, didn't quite get it.
Yeah, it's kind of like videoing yourself, isn't it? It's kind of like videoing yourself if you're performing, right? And saying, yeah, maybe I didn't quite hit that just like I thought I hit.
And we pull a lot of shoes off and redo them too, because there's, I think, like, people pay you and it doesn't matter what they paid you. Like, you need to give your best effort. And if you want to run your prices up and your worth up, I mean, when people realize you'll do that, they pretty soon don't care what you charge. They just want you because they know you're going to go that far. So I would highly encourage people to do that, and take your horse to the vet if you have a problem and meet your farrier there, pay him extra, but probably 30% extra, maybe. I don't know, but you should expect to pay him extra because it takes a lot of time, is on a serious note. Stick to a short schedule and, you know,
and consistency. I mean, I can't stress consistency enough, and consistency in the timing, the interval and this and that. But I mean, it's truly that consistent job, that consistent, right. You know, you know, as owners should have consistent expectation, and we all have bad days, you know, but you know, I don't want my horse to be the sacrifice for you having a bad day.
That is so often the one that falls on the sword. I mean, farriers have a bad day. And to be honest with you, we work in a range of tolerance. Yeah. The horse is the most tolerant, beautiful creature ever. Yeah. But also what I've found is that horse owners also hold the bus up too.
You bet.
Because they're like, hey, you know, I really think your horse could use a pad. Or, hey, I really think your horse could use a 4-week schedule. They're like, you know, the difference between 6 weeks to 5 weeks, folks, is only one more shoe in a year. And if that saves you one injection, your money ahead, and that's less strain on your horse.
Well, how about, or just bad horse behavior, right? It's hard to shoe a horse well that's being a jerk.
Yeah, no one remembers when they're looking at a bad shoe, and no one ever even considers, maybe he sucked.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, and so, you know, I mean, it's hard to keep a good attitude, put your best effort forward, if you got a horse that's jerking you around all the time.
Exactly. And a lot of farriers get a bad name for that, but you know, when you've got a horse that's making your job hard, and then all of a sudden they're inflicting pain by ripping a nail through you or stepping on your toe or just being rude in general. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we covered it.
I think so.
4 weeks, folks, if you got a performance barefoot trim. 5 weeks, if you're shoeing a performance horse. 6 weeks sometimes, but not on my schedule. 4 weeks if you have an existing problem. Seriously, talk to some of the therapeutic farriers of the world. They'll all say the same thing. The only way is to get ahead of it. And when you get ahead of it, you keep the inflammation down, right, Doc?
Correct.
So when you get ahead of it, you're working proactively. And then you don't put stress where it's not supposed to be, right? Keeping it where God intended. So keep it there. Keep it happy. Keep your horse happy. And I hope you have a great day. And God bless America. Say bye, Brad.
Bye.